This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Dire Straits, Dire Straits, their debut album. All right.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the one with Sultans of Swing on it.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought so.
Here's what it says on allmusic.com. It says, Dire Straits' minimalist interpretation of pub rock had already crystallized by the time they released their eponymous debut. Driven by Mark Knopfler's spare, tasteful guitar lines and his husky warbling, the album is a set of bluesy rockers. And while the bar band mentality of pub rock is at the core of Dire Straits, even the group's breakthrough single, Sultans of Swing, offered a lament for a neglected pub rock band. Their music is already beyond simple boogies and shuffles of their forefathers, occasionally dipping into jazz and country. Knopfler also shows an inclination towards Dylan-esque imagery, which enhances the smoky, low-key atmosphere of the album. While a few of the songs fall flat, the album is remarkably accomplished for a debut, and Dire Straits had difficulty surpassing it throughout their career. Okay. The album was released on June 9th, 1978. The genres are blues rock and pub rock. It was released on Vertigo, Warner Brothers, and Mercury Records, and was produced by Muff Winwood.
That's Steve Winwood's brother, I believe.
Oh, yeah? Okay. The album has 9 songs on it, and side one has 5, and side two has 4 songs. So what we'd like to do is we pause halfway through after side one and discuss the album and sort of discuss the album so far at the halfway point. And if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, and I've linked the album to in the show notes to both Spotify and Apple Music. So if you are listening along, that's where we'll start the side one starts with down to the waterline and ends with Southbound Again. So if you want to pause there and we'll discuss the album at the halfway point. Okay, so here is the album. Here is the first song on the album, Down to the Waterline. So here we go. Okay, and ending side one with Southbound Again. Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty solid album so far.
Yeah, I can't really pick out anything that I have any issue with or anything like that. It's his guitar playing is excellent. The whole band is pretty tight, although they're understated.
Yeah, it's not like in your face, heavy rock and roll. It's pretty laid back.
Yeah, it is. But that's not a bad thing either.
That's not a bad thing at all. No. It's very uncharacteristic of a British band. Like I always think like that laid back sort of thing is more characteristic of a band from like the Southern United States. This kind of has that feel of like, at least that last song, Southbound Again, it has that sort of, I don't know, like barbecue sort of, relaxed sort of sound.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. And it's true. A lot of British bands aren't like that. No, and you think about like the Who or Led Zeppelin or.
Yeah, they've got a lot of punch and energy and.
They're a lot more boisterous. Yep.
Which, I mean, you know, that's, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But, you know, this, not, you just don't expect that from a British band. But like pub rock is actually, it's something that I don't think we've really talked a whole lot about. And it's something that I don't know a whole lot about, but there was a movement in like the late 70s and in England, there was this genre called pub rock. And you think of as a bar band, as like a band doing like covers, but that's not really what they were. That's not really what it was. It was sort of inspired by it's sort of the bridge between like bluesy sort of like rootsy sort of rock and then like the punk stuff that would come a few years after. So like a lot of like Nick Lowe started out in as a pub rock.
This is actually very, I put this as like a contemporary of that, like the Rock Pile sort of thing. Yeah, it's definitely in a similar vein.
Well, yeah, record label Stiff Records, that they were a big record label for a lot of the pub rock band. You could sort of put the Pogues in that sort of category, although they were more Celtic influenced.
A little more punk attitude and a little more like Celtic influenced as far as the sound went. Yeah, for sure.
And I think it was sort of like, it was more of a, like in the 70s, glam rock was huge, and it did some stuff over here, but in England, it was huge. I think pub rock was a sort of a response to that sort of thing. It's like, well, that's cool, but let's bring it down and get back to our roots here of what rock and roll used to be, sort of.
It's funny, a band like Slade basically took over and really didn't make many waves here, although, you know, they would have like, you know, what band was it that did Come On, Feel the Noise? That it's actually a Slade song, but
Quiet Riot.
Yeah, Quiet Riot. They covered it, and most people had no idea. The first time they ever heard the song on this side of the ocean was Quiet Riot. But yeah, actually, Slade had quite a few songs kind of like that. They were actually quite prolific in England. But that's a side. That's an aside. But pub rock.
Yeah, I mean it is getting back to that sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say there, well, this album, I mean, a couple of the songs do sound like straight, like they could have been recorded in 1956.
Okay.
You know, so it does have that sort of rockabilly sort of influence to it. Like a couple of, like, I think, was it Setting Me Straight? That one definitely, like, that's like a rockabilly song.
Setting Me Up?
Or Setting Me Up, yeah.
Yeah, it sort of was. I mean, it's still definitely got his Mark Knopfler's sort of stamp on it. Yeah, I would probably place it like roots rock or something like that. It's definitely going back to its roots. But yeah, it's definitely sort of stripped down to its bare essentials to what he wanted to convey. But it's also way more laid back than even some of that early rock and roll. Got pretty rowdy if you ever saw it live.
That's the thing about the punk rock movement is people were like, oh my God, these kids are out of hand. Well, you know, take a look at some of the stuff that was going on then. I don't know, like, if this album were to be released today, it was really popular at the time. Like, Sultans of Swing was a massive hit, and they really, like, a debut album with a hit like that. They were really popular in 1978 when this album came out. That was a big song for them. But and certainly that's one of the songs that I do see keep coming up online with like guitar players. It certainly have an appreciation for that song.
But trying to place it in today's world of music, especially when you consider the loudness war, because this is so not that.
This is so not that. And it's also in a time like we were saying, the laid backness, for lack of a better term, of the rhythm and everything. Like, this was a time before like Pro Tools, and where like what you can do now, and it's very common, it's actually the standard, industry standard, of yes, recording drums, but then correcting it by cutting it up and placing it right on the grid. So everything is exactly on the right beat, and not just the drums, but the bass and every instrument is exactly perfect.
I kind of hate that, because it takes the humanity out of it. And any like, and sometimes that would completely mess up like, think of even some of the rhythms in this, like Southbound Again, we were just listening to that sort of a shuffle beat. If you were to take, you know, that drum and correct everything, there would be no natural sort of vibe to it. It would sound very contrived. I don't know how else to put it, but it would completely screw up the pocket of the whole thing.
Exactly. You're right. It takes the specialness, the whatever you want to call it, the uniqueness of it out of it. And when I do hear like newer rock songs that have had that treatment, even before I knew that that's what they were doing, it's just, I think, and someone who's a non-musician who doesn't really know about that stuff, even they will hear something like that and go, something is just off here. It's just, they don't like, there's just something about it that sounds off. So I don't think this album really would, I don't know if it would do anything, because I don't know, first of all, it wouldn't be promoted, but even if it was, I don't know if people would, they would either, it would be really popular because it would be a breath of fresh air, or it would be too retro and it wouldn't really fit in today.
Yeah, retro might not be the worst part of it, but it might be maybe the wrong kind of retro or something. And I know what you mean by that, and none of these things that we're talking about right now are really to the album's detriment. It actually says more about today's music landscape than it does about this album. In fact, it says a lot about the music landscape this album came out of, and it was just, there was a lot more freedom when it came to artists. There just was. You can argue otherwise. Well, I don't know how you could argue otherwise, because it just isn't.
The critics really liked this album when it came out too. Like it was really well received, you know, across the board. I mean, it's got, you know, 8 out of 10, 5 out of 5, you know, 4.5 stars. Like it's not perfect and not 10 out of 10, but it's, you know, it was well received and well liked. And, you know, it says in his review for Rolling Stone, Ken Tucker wrote that the band plays tight, spare mixtures of rock, folk, and country music with a serene spirit and witty irony. I think that's a perfect description. And, you know, it's funny. I I always thought that Mark Knopfler's voice probably, of all the singers, probably sounds the most like Bob Dylan.
Yeah, a certain era of Bob Dylan. A little bit more palatable. Not to really, you know, crap on Bob Dylan, because I actually really like Bob Dylan. But his voice is a little bit more, I don't know, it's a little bit softer, but it still has a similar timbre to it.
Yeah, it very much does. It's sort of like, it's sort of like Bob Dylan. I don't want to say that because he's played with some really good rock and roll bands, but
they sometimes make him.
But I don't think he would fit in with like this kind of music, like this pop music. So Mark Knopfler is almost the pop version of Bob Dylan, like in the sense of more catchy melodies and more hooks, I guess.
Because I certainly wouldn't think of, you know, Mark Knopfler so much in a pop music sense. Because I still think of him very much as like a musician's musician. He, as popular as he was, he's still basically a musician's musician. He really is.
Right, but what I'm thinking of is like more in the sense of thinking more about creating more melody rather than Bob Dylan focusing on the lyrics and then the melody coming after. Mark Knopfler is more of a
song crafter,
song craftsman. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can sort of see that. But again, Bob Dylan's also sort of, he's done that too, because he's a man of many hats, but I know what you mean. I think Mark Knopfler sort of is more of a, that's, as opposed to being one of the things he does, that's, I won't say that's all he does, but that is his primary talent, I guess, other than being a great guitar player.
Well, there's that too. I mean, he is an amazing guitar player and very tasteful guitar player. Excuse me, there really isn't a whole lot of information on this album, surprisingly. I did manage to find a few facts, though. You were right. Muff Winwood is Steve Winwood's older brother, and he was the bass player for the Spencer Davis Group. He did produce a few other bands. He produced Traffic, which is also with Steve Winwood, and Moth to Hoople, and the Noel Redding band. Noel Redding is the bass player for Jimi Hendrix. So he produced a few notable artists. He's had a pretty good career doing that. And the other thing I found on this album is this is the first of only two albums that features Mark Knopfler's brother, David, who is playing rhythm guitar. He left the band in 1980. Not really sure why he left the band. I didn't really find anything about that, but just says that he did.
Who knows? He might have started a family or something like that and just couldn't be on the road anymore.
Yeah, that's true. But the other thing is we all know about brothers and bands.
Oh, yeah, that's the other reason. It's true.
Yeah. But yeah, surprisingly, there isn't a whole lot of info on this album, but that was what I managed to scrounge up. But yeah, I guess we will get into the second side of the album. But before we do, let's hear from our friends over at the Pick a Disc podcast. So here we go with that.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps for searching for Pick a Disc. You can also find us on the part of the WeDig Podcast Network under Linktree/WeDig Podcast. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with Lions. This is a really solid album. The guitar playing on it is fantastic. I mean, the songwriting is great. The band is great. It's just a really solid rock and roll album.
Yeah, I can't complain about it. It's definitely more on the, when it comes to rock and roll, this is definitely a more on the laid back side, but it's a really good, just a breezy album to listen to. Yeah, I don't think there's really anything, you know, any like real down spots on the album or anything like that. It sort of, you know, gets a little bit more laid back towards the end, but that might not be such a bad thing either. It sort of rounds it up. It's nice the way it sort of works out.
You know, for a debut album, this is pretty solid. I mean, you kind of expect debut albums to be... you know, you expect a young band to not have such well-executed, fleshed-out ideas.
Yeah, it's very sophisticated for a first album, for sure.
You know, even the best bands, I mean, their debut albums are great, but, like, I think about Led Zeppelin's debut album, and it's great. But you can tell that they're very new. They're very, like, it's a very new band, and they're very fresh, and they haven't quite gotten to the point where they are just gelled as a band. And that's just because they hadn't been playing together for very long. And a lot of debut albums do sound like that. This sounds like they've been playing together for 20 years.
Yes, it sounds, well, yeah, like I said, it sounds very sophisticated, but yeah, it sounds very well, they sound like very well-established musicians. Like, I don't know how old these guys were when they did this, but they sound like they could, they're at least in their 30s or 40s, sort of. Putting out stuff like this. And I'm quite certain that Mark Knopfler and company were younger than that.
Yeah, so Mark Knopfler was born in 1949. So this recorded in 77, came out in 70. So he was like 27 when they were recording this. So not that old. You know. So yeah, they're wise beyond their years, I guess. I don't think later releases of Dire Straits quite had that magic.
No, it's true. Like, even Brothers in Arms, you know, it's got some good songs on it for sure. But as an album, it wasn't quite as well fleshed out as this one is.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is, you know, they had a new drummer with a different feel. Nothing wrong with that, but like, it didn't quite gel as well in that it was, that felt more like a Mark Knopfler solo album than a band.
Maybe. Yeah. I know what you mean, but again, some songs worked so well that they overcame that, but the whole album as a whole, like, there were just too many weak spots in it. And I'm not saying everything else was like horrible or anything like that, but it didn't have the energy, it didn't have the just the overall, it wasn't that fun to try and listen to,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's well, that's exactly it. I think here you can tell that they're enjoying playing these songs. Whereas Brothers in Arms, still a good album, but it felt like more like they were working rather than just enjoying the process. And you can tell that in the music. So I think, yeah, I think this, it's funny. It's usually the opposite happens, where the first album isn't, you know, for a band, isn't quite there yet. And then more releases come and they find their sound and, you know, fall into a groove of playing together.
To be perfectly honest, I haven't listened to a lot of Dire Straits' other albums. As for like my three favorite songs off this, this is a pretty good album. I'd probably say, I mean, Sultans of Swing is really good, but if I were to pick three favorites, I'm going to go three favorites other than Sultans of Swing, and I'm going to go with Setting Me Up, Southbound Again, and In the Gallery. I think those ones are my favorites.
Yeah, interesting. I think I would go, I'm going to do the same and not pick Sultans of Swing, because it is like, it's probably, other than Money for Nothing, that's probably their best known song. And it is such a, you know, I've heard that song, you know.
Oh, so have I. And it is a really good song.
It's a really good song. But if, you know, to pick some of the other ones, I think I would probably go with Down to the Waterline. Yeah, In the Gallery had some really good guitar work at the end there.
Pretty solid. You could pick a bunch of different ones off this one.
There isn't a bad song here. That's it's tough to pick three favorites, but if I were to, like, those would be my highlights for sure. So I think I know the answer, but would you listen to this again?
Oh yeah, I'd listen to this again. Sure. It might be another one where I have to be I don't have to force this one. Some albums where I think I'm going to listen to it again, but I have to be in the right mood. This is sort of that, but honestly, I don't have to force the mood that much. It's just a decent album. I could put it on and it might put me in the mood. It's just a good album.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, yeah, even if I'm not in the mood to listen to it, putting it on would get me in the mood to listen to it. So yeah, I totally agree. I think, I feel the same way that you do with that. So yes, I would definitely listen to this again. So I think that just about does it. I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. If you're enjoying listening to these episodes and want to join the community, you can do that in a few ways. You can follow us on Instagram at Polyphonic Press. And you can also check out, if you're on Reddit, we do have our own subreddit that I just set up. So you can follow us along on Reddit there and, you know, discuss with other people about these albums and post whatever you want about music, and within reason, of course. Yeah, you can follow us there. And you can also join Patreon, and there's some cool stuff. There's a chat function. You can talk with us and other people, and you can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can even pick an album for us to review. So that's pretty cool. So if you feel like helping us out on Patreon, you can go there, and all those links are in the description. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.